What's up, bingers? Thanks for tuning in, and please, if you have not done so already, take a moment, pop into iTunes, and leave a rating and review for us. It really helps make the podcast more visible to new listeners, and it makes me feel better about myself. And today, we have kind of an odd couple as our guests. We have a lovely lady who bakes cakes for a living and speaks with a brilliant British accent. And then we have Nick and the Captain's lifelong friend who crunches numbers for a living. Together, they host the super interesting show that just turned 1 year old, Crimepedia. Please welcome Cherry and Morgan.
The internet's full of true crime podcasts. More and more are added to the list every day. Figuring out where to start or where to go next can be overwhelming. But have no fear, I'm here to help. I'm Bob Ruff, and this is the place to find your next true crime binge.
All three of us, on the count of three, do one clap. That'll help Mike line everything up when he gets it. So, one, two, three. The clap heard round the world. Since we actually have, well, we don't usually have people from across the pond on the podcast. Welcome, Cherry. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yep. And of course, Morgan, who's here stateside holding down the fort.
Hello, Bob.
So you guys, I've never met Cherry. I got to meet Morgan. Had I met you before this year's crime? Every time I run into you, I've been drinking, so I don't remember if I've met you before.
You met me during the infamous drinking contest with Captain in New Orleans.
Oh, so you were there for that.
I was there.
Oddly enough, don't remember that. Don't remember most of that evening.
Well, that happened. Well, luckily I did, because I went really hard, way too hard, Thursday night. And I didn't realize that New Orleans, they don't shut down their bars. So I'm used to being...
Like ever.
Ever. Yeah, I'm used to being in Ohio where at like, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, whatever, they're like, okay, great, thanks for having fun, now get out. And so then you go home and you go to sleep. Well, in New Orleans, It's like 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, on a Friday morning, it's like, wait, why am I still here? And then I go back and, you know, I sleep for, you know, 3 hours before crime starts up.
Right. Yeah. You need that adult to tell you that it's time to go home.
Yes.
When you get a little bit older, Morgan, I think you're the same age as Captain and Nick, right?
Yes.
Or which one of them?
I'm right. I'm actually in between. So Nick is a year older. So, Captain's a year younger.
So I feel like one or two more years and you hit the age where you no longer need the babysitter. Your body at about 10 o'clock starts going, no, thank you. We're done now. It's time to go to bed.
Yep. Yep.
So Morgan is a lifelong friend of Nick and the Captain's. Mm-hmm. We've met a little bit. Are you and Captain still doing, at one point you guys had a show called the Captain and Morgan Show.
We are not. Now we've talked about bringing it back. Yeah. So we had a show that ran for about a year. It was just me and the Captain. And originally we were going to be talking about, it was almost going to be like a true crime garage after show where we'd get on and we'd talk about it, because he would always call me up anyways when he has, you know, on certain episodes, and like, you know, we'd sit there for hours talking about it. So it's like, why not we just, you know, record this and send it out? So that's what it was supposed to be. But then it turned into some weird
locker room boy chat.
Yeah, locker room boy chat. Basically, Captain just going off the rails and just whatever comes to his mind, he just talks about. And I sat there and just going, so we did that for about a year. But then he got to a point where, I mean, he's a busy guy. He's a really busy guy. Where he just didn't have the time for it, and he didn't have the time or really to record or really to put a lot of effort into it. So he didn't want to do anything half-assed. So we stopped it. But it's interesting because that's how Crimepedia started. Because I asked Cherry to hop on, I think it was the last four episodes of Captain Morgan. If you go back, I think I still have them up and running. If you go back and listen to the last four episodes, Cherry was the guest host. And so she was like my co-host for those episodes. And I think after the second or third episode, I went to her and I said, why don't we just do this together? It makes sense.
How did you guys meet? Because Cherry, you live in England.
Yeah.
And Morgan's a knucklehead. So you being from England, I'm certain you're very sophisticated. So how did this match happen?
Well, I was the outro voice for Captain and Morgan. So I did their outro, their outro for them. And we were friends, I think, in Discord. It was a True Crime Garage thing that I always used to listen to, True Crime Garage. And so we kind of met. And you're taking the mickey out the way I say garage now, aren't
garage.
You? Because you I say love garage.
Garage.
That's that sophistication. So you were in a True Crime Garage Discord.
Yeah. And that's how That's how I met Morgan.
Yeah.
And on the True Crime Garage Discord.
Yeah. And Cherry, actually, you started your own True Crime podcast.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Had right my before own, we yeah. started.
Yeah.
And then
it was like,
what was that one?
So it was the Crime Cabinet I used to have. And I only did like about 6 or 8 episodes. And then Morgan came to me and said, look, let's do this. Would you want to come in and do Captain's Away for a couple of weeks? Do you want to come in as a guest? So I said, oh, yeah, that's fine. So we did that for a few episodes. And he was like, hey, like people really like this. And I really like it. What do you think about doing it like now? And I was like, okay, yeah, let's do it. So then we came up with the name and it just sort of flowed from there. So then I got rid of the other one and carried on.
So tell me about yourself, Cherry. Are you born and raised in England?
Yeah.
What did you do for, is podcasting your career or do you have another career? What are you trained in? How did you end up here now?
So I used to be a radio presenter. So I used to present breakfast on a show over here. And then it was a mainstream show. And then it all got bought out and changed. And then I did it for a local radio show. And then I started my own business. And then, yeah, still doing that whilst podcasting. So, yeah, still just working hard and, yeah, born and raised in England. And, yeah, that's about it, really. Nothing exciting.
What's your business that you run?
So I have a bakery. So I make wedding cakes and that kind of stuff.
Amazing cakes, Bob. Amazing cakes.
Oh, bless him.
Did you like the really pretty cakes with the, what are they called? The fondant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look like stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy things. Lots of different ones, which is nice. We get lots of different people asking for loads of different stuff, which is good. So it's very varied. So it keeps me really busy.
So you were, I'm reading in the notes, Erica set up for me. And you kind of worked in marketing and PR.
Yeah.
And broadcasting.
Yeah.
And then now you bake cakes. Like, how did that?
I know. It was a total accident. It was just a total accident. Somebody asked me to make a cake for their birthday. I did. Then somebody else asked me and somebody else asked me. And it was like, well, okay, I've got a lot of this on. And so I was like, well, I'll just try it and see. And then 8 years later, my own store and yeah, massively full diary of stuff. And yeah, it's just crazy. It's crazy busy.
That's awesome. What part of England are you in?
I'm in the southwest of England. So I'm on the coast where it's like loads of beaches and like beaches on this side and then loads of really nice like countryside. So right down in the southwest.
So I did a speaking tour in the UK a few years ago.
No
and
way.
I got to see a little. It's the first time I've ever been there, but we flew into London, drove, took a train up to Manchester.
Okay.
And then we did a show in Manchester, and then we drove up to Edinburgh, Scotland.
Cool.
Or excuse me, we did Newcastle. We drove train up to Newcastle, then Edinburgh, then back to Manchester, and then finished in London.
Oh, sounds so you didn't like come didn't anywhere near the southwest at all?
No.
Rude. No.
I think like London's kind of southish, right? Isn't
no.
it?
No.
it's further south than Newcastle.
It's further south than Newcastle. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah, that's true. No one ever comes down here because we're like right in the middle of nowhere. So no one ever comes down this bit when they do like tours and stuff.
Yeah, there's they don't no come down real as far as here. Main cities down there. Like where would you go?
Exeter you could go. That's a big Exeter. Huge city. Yeah, okay. Exeter would be good. So next time you do your like British tour, come down, say hello.
Well, I want to come again, go again and just for like vacation sometime.
Yeah.
Because I thought like, I was like, oh, this is cool. I'm getting paid to go see, I mean, and I'm Scottish actually. So I'd never been to Scotland. So I was like, this is cool. I get paid to go see these, but there was so much driving. And so it was like, we never got to see anything. I did meet Idris Elba.
Oh, he's
London.
Oh, wow. Fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, funny story. I like to say, so I big-timed Idris Elba at in a bar. And is it Notting Hill? That's what it's called, right? That little. So we did it was our last show, and we get done, and all the events when the show was over, then we all would have like drinks and do like a big meet and greet. And this particular venue, it was in like that Notting Hill area, and I guess they're really big on like being real quiet and like you can't disturb people after a certain time.
Yeah.
So when the show is over, they're like, you have to go, and there's 200 people there or whatever. And we're like, and so some of the locals were like, well, let's go down to this pub down the road and we can all meet there. And so we just go walking down the street. And as I walk in, the place is jam packed, which I don't like. I don't do that many people in my personal space. And everybody else was there ahead of me, and they were in some back room waiting to go like take pictures and stuff like that. And so as I'm walking in, now I should preface this by saying I don't know anything about pop culture. I don't know actors. I don't know anything.
Okay.
So I'm come walking in, and some guy grabs me and goes, hey, man, Idris Elba's here, and he does like what you do, like on, but I didn't even hear him say like on TV. And he's like, you do it in real life. You guys totally got to get a picture together. I told him you're coming. And I'm like,
who?
Okay. Whatever. I'm like, I don't know who that is. So I walk in, and then there's this huge crowd, and I'm fighting through the crowd, and the people are in the back, and they're like waving to me. And then he walks up, and he's like, Idris. And he steps up, and this big, beautiful black man steps up and shakes my hand. And I'm looking, I'm like anxious. There's too many people. I don't know who he is. All these people are in the back. And he's like, you want to get a picture, mate? And I was like, I'll get one with you in a minute, dude. I got a bunch of people back here waiting for me. I'm going to go back and see them. I'll catch up with you in a little bit. And he looked at me like, who the fuck is this guy? And so I go wandering to the back, and then I do the thing, take all the pictures, and I come out, and my wife is sitting with the two ladies from Newcastle that had taken us out there, and they're all just glaring at me.
I bet they were. Your wife's like, what the hell?
Yeah. They're like, what? Why did you do that to Idris Elba? I'm like, who is he? I don't even know who that guy is.
That's so funny.
And he's gone there. They're like, well, right now he's on the cover of People magazine as the most beautiful man in the world.
Yeah.
Like, oh, and he's on this show and this show.
Suicide Squad.
Yeah. So I big timed Idris Elba.
That's amazing.
That's so amazing.
Give him his picture later. And then my wife didn't speak to me for 2 weeks because she didn't get to meet him because I had just blown him off.
Oh, no.
Because I had no idea who he was.
That's going to happen when we're in Vegas. That's what's going to happen. There's going to be people that I have no idea who they are. And you're going to be like, you know who that is, don't you? You know who you've just said, excuse me, I'll be back in a minute too. I know it's going to happen. Yeah. I know it.
Oh, I'm the worst at it. I have a history of it. I did it to John Cryer when he was the producer on my TV show, but I didn't know who he was emailing me because he liked the show and was going back and forth and asking me questions about the case we were working on. And then one day he sends me a message. He's like, hey man, give me your phone number. I want to call you and talk to you about doing a show together. And I'm thinking this is some fan that now wants my personal phone number to talk about doing a podcast together.
That's so funny.
And luckily, the only reason that show got made is because I happened to mention to my wife. I'm like, can you believe the nerve of this guy? Like, he wants my personal, but like we're best buddies. Like, and she's like, does that say John Cryer? I'm like, yeah. Like, who's that? She's like, fucking Ducky?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's Ducky, like, man.
Yeah.
I have no idea who that is. No idea.
Oh, he played Alan in 2 and a Half Men, which is where I really knew him from, and from Ducky. And I was like, oh, but I had originally blown him off. I'm like, yeah, maybe sometime. I'll let you know. Because I didn't want to be mean and tell this poor sap that I wasn't going to give him my phone number.
That's so funny.
And it was... So I have a track record of my ignorance leading me to being very rude to celebrities over my history.
That's brilliant.
So Morgan, what do you do?
Nothing
besides
exciting.
Make podcasts.
I'm not a professional podcaster. I don't do anything cool like make cakes. I work in healthcare. I would do in healthcare analytics. So I am a numbers guy.
Ooh.
I basically do statistics and I look at.
You had like your best year of your life this year, right? There's it was all everything was about numbers.
You get yeah. I know.
Did you get involved in any of that?
I have. Yeah, I have been involved with some stuff.
Yeah,
that I probably can't talk about. But yes,
right. Get the show deplatformed.
Yeah, so I do that. Actually, it's weird. I got my degree in history, and somehow I ended up working in healthcare. That's just how it worked out for me.
So you went to college, you got a bachelor's degree in history.
Yep.
And then you work in healthcare data analyst. Like, what is that? Like, what kind of numbers? Are you talking like financial numbers?
Financial numbers. Like, mostly kind of numbers mostly financial numbers. Long story short, I go and I make sure that hospitals are not overbilling the company I work for. And then go back and attempt to recoup any overpaid dollars.
Nice. Any chance you could do that with the hospital bills that get sent to me? Because I feel like there should be a you for every one of me that's out there, because they overcharge everyone, don't they?
Isn't they that their do.
Shtick?
But in a sense, yeah. That's kind of what I'm doing. So if you think about it, any time that a hospital overcharges for a service, who's going to be picking up the bill if it's not recouped? It's going to be the patient, right?
Right.
So yeah,
so that's what happens, is we just get stuck with it.
No, and I mean,
you're like
talking,
a little Superman.
No, I'm not. I'm just a guy that looks at numbers and I get yelled at by hospital systems.
Oh, it's messed up. And in very contrast to what Cherry has, they have their universal health care in Great Britain.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I was a fireman for a long time and I worked on engines. I even worked on an ambulance for some of the time. And so I would always think, like, when you would see somebody's ambulance bill and they're like, oh, it cost me $2,000 to go to the hospital. Oh,
it's crazy.
Like, yep. There was two guys in that ambulance making $17 an hour and it cost them $4 in gas. That's what that ride cost. Mm-hmm. That's what the ride cost.
It's different over there, isn't it? Because you have like your fireman and you have like medical together. I watch Station 19. I know all about this.
Right, so, right. Mm-hmm. So if you run into one of the Station 19 guys
I'll be fine.
In Vegas, you'll be fine.
I'll be fine. I know who they are.
Yeah. That's funny. So in Small World, we actually have on our the Truth and Justice research, we have a research team that is selecting our next case that is going through all of them. And one of the ladies that's on that team is, I'll mess up her title. She's some kind of line producer or so. She works on Station 19.
Oh, wow.
She's good, like, work.
Yeah.
It's a great show, that is.
I have a Station 19 hat.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Connected, like,
here's
all
a hat
over
from
the place.
Station 19. Yeah, no kidding. And that one, you know, she's like, here's a Station 19 hat when I met her at a fan meetup. And I was like, what is that, like a local fire station? What are you?
Oh, my God. Like,
No, I didn't say that.
Oh, no.
But yeah, it's very, very different systems that we have there. But our, you know what, what do you guys call it? Our petrol is cheaper than yours. So
yeah, you've got really cheap petrol.
Yeah. Well, it was funny when I was traveling around Europe, or not Europe, just around the UK with the ladies that took us out there. Again, they're from Newcastle. And we were like talking about the differences in like taxes and healthcare and education and stuff like that. And we were I remember us sitting down with our calculators over our morning tea, trying to figure out what the fuel equivalent was. Cause everything was in like pounds per liters per pound or whatever, or pounds per liter instead of gallons or dollars per gallon. And I'm like, if my math is right, you guys are paying $9 per gallon of gas.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because of all the taxes on there.
Yeah.
It's insane, the differences between the United States and the UK, especially like during cases. Mm-hmm. I think we both have had moments where we have completely disagreed with how, you know, cases or results of cases were handled, right? So, Cherry, how many times have you said to me, like, she does not think that the Fifth Amendment is a good thing. She doesn't like the Fifth Amendment, right? So you're right to
the one where people are able to not speak.
It just makes me crazy. It makes me mad. I'm just like, no, you should have to speak, because if you're
waterboard them, get them.
That's right. Whack them on their backs. That's right. Sort them out. It's just like, no, you should have to speak. If you're guilty, then you're going to drop yourself in it. If you're innocent, you've got nothing to worry about. So, like, no, I hate it when they do that. Oh, I pled the Fifth. I'm just like, no pleading the Fifth. I don't like it.
So it's funny. So What you just said made me go, as somebody that my other show works in wrongful convictions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we worked so many of them where these people were innocent and they're in prison because they didn't shut their damn mouths.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I teach my little children. I'm like, listen, if the police ever talk to you about anything, I don't care if someone in your school took a pencil, you say lawyer.
Yeah.
That's all you say. Don't say a damn word to them. twist it around.
Just don't speak. I want my dad and I want the lawyer.
Right, that's exactly. So do you have kids?
Yeah. Sherry? I've got a teenager, so I've said exactly the same to her. You don't say anything until I get there. Don't say a word.
No, you should be telling them, listen, spill your guts. If you're innocent, there'll be no problem. Just tell them everything. Tell them what you had for breakfast. Just keep talking. Whatever you do, just keep talking until I get there.
I think it's just frustrating, isn't it? It's just frustrating when you're looking through a case and you're reading through transcripts and stuff. And it's the same here, because obviously over here, we've got the right to silence and we just say no comment. Oh, and it just drives me mad because as somebody who's reading it, obviously I understand why they do it, but as someone who's reading it or looking through something like that, I mean, I've looked through it. I've just been listening to I've been watching your West Memphis 3. I was just thinking, no, don't talk. Don't say anything. And then I'm thinking, oh no, because I normally say, no, just keep talking. Just tell us what you know. But so yeah, I understand. It's just frustrating when you just want answers and everybody's not saying a word.
Well, it's really frustrating as content creators because I'm such a hypocrite because I'm always like people shouldn't talk. You should have a lawyer. Yeah. You know, just keep your mouth shut. The police, even good cops, and I'm a firm believer in there's many more good cops out there than are bad cops. Mm. They still don't have your best interest in mind.
No.
They're trying to close their case.
Of course. Yeah.
So you shut up.
Yeah.
Let them find evidence if there's evidence. But as a content, I remember I had Chris Lambert on, who does the Your Own Backyard podcast, the Kristen Smart case. And that was one of those where like the main suspect for like years just would not talk in depositions. He's like, I plead the fifth, wouldn't talk. And I'm like, this is bullshit. Yeah. He should have to say,
like
I want to know the answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. Exactly the same as me. I'm just like, no pleading the fifth. Tell me what I want to know. Give me the answers.
Well, I think we should be able to dictate who gets to be silent and who doesn't. Like if someone's boring or whatever, sure, be silent. But if we really need to know what you have to say, then you know, we bring out the shackles and the torture devices, whatever we got to do.
Electrocute them a bit.
Those sons of bitches talking. Right, yeah. So your guys' podcast starts, so you were kind of working together and you decide to lose the captain. He's a big loser anyway. I was with him just a couple days ago. He and I went to Cleveland for a live show. We were down there and I saw him act like more of an adult than I have ever seen him.
Never.
I've known him for about 5 years. Oh, well, he had a gig or something in the morning on Friday morning. So Josh Hallmark and I from True Crime Bullshit, we had a hotel down there. What is Cleveland for you guys? Are you still in Columbus?
I'm in Columbus, yeah.
Morgan?
Yep.
What was it, about two and a half hours
yeah.
Cleveland?
Yep.
Yeah. And the show is at like 7 o'clock at night, so it's going to be late and everybody be drinking. And then Captain gets there and he's like, yeah, I didn't get a room. I'm going to drive home tonight, so I'm going to have to take it easy. And my first thought was, bullshit.
Boring.
We better reserve him a room because, he's not going to. And we get there and he's just as expected, like we're trying to do the live show. And in the middle of the show, he's ordering shots up to the table and we're coming like, here we go. That's the captain I know.
Let's get these things.
We got him sharing secrets. He was letting all kinds of secrets out during that show.
Oh, I love it.
But then shockingly, the captain hit the brakes and spent the next 3 hours hanging out with everybody, drinking Cokes and waters for the rest of the night. And it was, it was like very responsible and boring. Stupid captain ruined everything by being an adult that night.
We're not going to let him adult when I come over. When I come to visit, we're going to have the proper captain.
He can't.
Adults.
Yeah, you have the proper.
No, he can't. And when it's during Crime Con, no, he can't.
No way.
He can't.
No.
Calm down. I don't want to ruin anything, but his captain persona definitely comes out very strong during Crime Con.
Yeah. Yeah, when he starts throwing him back. And the Nick persona gets ruined because everybody thinks Nick's the straight
guy.
Oh,
no. When he's drunk, he's so funny.
No.
So funny.
Right.
And Nick can drink. He is a drinker.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing how that boy can drink.
That one get together we were all at, the whatever the night it was at Crime mm-hmm. Con. He and I were going bourbon for bourbon for a while there.
Oh, that, no.
He can put them down. But this thing in Cleveland, surprise, so Captain's there. And then, there's degrees of responsibility. like most people for this group would see, like, Captain obviously is the most irresponsible. And then I'm like slightly ahead of him. Because he won the drinking contest, so he said.
This is true. I heard all about this.
And then we have Josh Hallmark there, who was like the adult in the room, except for that's not how it worked out. Captain ends up being the adult and drinks, and you know, he has water and Coke until he's sober and then drives mm-hmm. home. Josh and I leave. We get a ride back to our hotel at, I don't know what it was. It was like 12:30 or something. We've been drinking all evening. And then Josh is like, the bar is shut down, but we see that there's wine bottles behind the front desk. And Josh is like, do you think it would be okay if we just got a bottle of wine and just hung out for a little while? Because wow, we haven't had much of a chance to talk since we were there. So I'm like, sure, let's do it. Now, mind you, I started the night with bourbon, switched to beer, and now I'm on red wine.
Oh, my God.
I'm still hungover. And then now people are hearing this in a few weeks. But it's Monday. That was Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So we get a bottle of wine and sit down in the lobby, drink a whole bottle of wine, order another bottle of wine, and we get about halfway through that one, and we're both like, oh, man. Mm-hmm. We should probably, what time is we? Look, it's 3:30 in the fucking morning.
Oh, wow.
And we're still sitting in the lobby drinking. We talked about everything from podcasts and true crime to politics, our views on abortion. Like, we got into everything.
Absolutely everything. I love it.
Yeah, that's when it was bedtime. It was like, well, I think we've run out of every single controversial issue to possibly talk about. Let's mm-hmm. call it a night.
Let's get to bed.
Yeah, and then Friday, we both did the same thing. Got back to our rooms, called the front desk, and asked for a late checkout Friday to give us a few hours to sleep. And then I wake up at 9 in the morning with my head throbbing. Oh. And I didn't have any Advil with me. And it was the worst. I was so, I'm laying in bed like I could sleep for 3 more hours, but my head is throbbing. The only way for me to fix my throbbing head is going to be to get up, get dressed, and go downstairs to the lobby to go buy some Advil to come back. And at that point, I might as well just leave. So, and with traffic, it had been a 6-hour drive home for me,
oh,
just completely
wow.
hungover, mm-hmm. exhausted.
That's not fun. Worst.
While Captain was home feeling right as well. Listen, look at Morgan. No. As though you wouldn't do something like that.
Yeah, he was really good though in Texas Crime Con. You were so good because obviously I was here. I couldn't get over there. So we were like literally.
See, wasn't when I saw him.
We were FaceTiming all the time, and then he rings me at like 1 o'clock in the morning. 1 o'clock in the morning your time, which is what five six in the morning
six your time. Oh, five.
He's like,
time.
Hey.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you doing? I was like, I'm walking to work. And he's like, yeah, I'm still out. Yeah, look. And he's like, all these people, and all these people are going, hi. And I'm like, hello. Oh, my God. Yeah, so you were a little bit.
I wanted to include you. I wanted to include you.
Yeah, no, it was good. Yeah. It was really good.
All right, so tell us a little bit about Crimepedia. What is the kind of format of the show? What can people expect if they tune in?
Go, Morgan. I'll let you explain it. You're much better than me at this.
Still working out the details. Not sure what's
going
on. No, so we're a weekly true crime podcast where we do things a little differently, where while there's two of us, we rotate who's covering the case or who's telling the story each week. So one week, I will have a story that I'm telling to Cherry. Sometimes I don't even tell her what it is or give her any information about it. And she'll do the same for me. Sometimes if the case is very complex, we will share some details that are required. We do that just because mm-hmm. we like the shocking moments that we give to each other, right? So those moments where I enjoy doing, you know, getting to a point in the story where I will say, however, and then Cherry blows her mind because she thinks one thing, and then all of a sudden I'm going to throw a tire wrench into it. We cover cases across the globe. Cherry does a lot from the UK and Ireland. I do. Most of mine have been United States and now Canada. And hopefully I'm going to expand from that, which is good because with our audience, we do have a very broad audience. you know, it's really, well, it's mostly United States and the UK where our listeners are coming from. So it's nice because our US listeners might not know the UK stories or the cases very well, or if at all. And then vice versa with our UK listeners, where we're telling them cases that they might not know. We tend to focus on cases that aren't getting a lot of coverage. So cases that really any of our listeners might not know. One thing we always get stuff be like, hey, you guys ever going to cover Delphi? Well, Delphi, there's not a whole lot we're going to be able to add to the story, or there's not going to be information that we can, you know, give to listeners that they haven't already heard. So our thought is,
right,
while it is important for cases like that to be heard, it might not be, it's not really not our, you know, our podcast that's going to, you know, be breaking these cases or giving out new information. So we want to focus on those cases that aren't being covered, or ones that are definitely lesser known. I think that's it. Our show in a nutshell.
Hmm.
Unless Cherry, you have anything else to add?
Nope, that was fine.
Nope, you get a you know, half of British accent and half an American accent, so you can choose your flavor, yeah, which case you want to listen to. The case that you guys selected to talk about today is one of those UK cases that I'm assuming that you selected, Cherry. The case is Debbie Lindsay.
Yeah.
Why don't you take it away? Tell us about the Debbie Lindsay case.
So Debbie Lindsay was a woman who was living and working in Edinburgh. She went down to her brother was getting married. She went down to her family for the weekend and was having a bridesmaid dress fit in, really excited for the brother's wedding. And then she was working in a hotel in Edinburgh, but she wanted to change to maybe work closer to home. So she was looking at a place in Baker Street in London, the Sherlock Holmes Hotel. She'd been offered a job there. So her brother gave her a lift to the train station. She got on the train and it was literally like a 30 minute journey, 34 minutes. She got into the carriage and we're talking, this was back in, we were 1988. So it's quite a while ago. And our trains have changed a lot since then. Back in the day, you used to have the carriages were, you'd have separate ones that you could smoke in and you could only enter them from one door. So they wouldn't sort of, you couldn't walk all the way through the carriages like you can now. She got onto this smoking carriage and by the time the 34 minute journey was up, a porter at the end station went down to check that all the carriages were empty and found her murdered in the carriage. And there's still, even now, there's nothing. There's no DNA that they've been able to, there was obviously blood everywhere. She was stabbed quite a few times. There's a lot of blood in the carriage, but there's no other DNA that they can find that they can attribute to anybody. There's no sightings of anybody leaving that train. There's no sightings of anyone getting on the train with her. And it's basically just gone completely cold. And it's such a short amount of time. And there seems to be nobody that knows anything about what happened to her.
And this was in 1988.
Yeah.
When I started looking at the case, the first thing I thought of is, it sounds like an Agatha Christie story.
It does. Which is why I did the title.
I wonder if
that.
It's based on it. Yeah, I wonder when Murder on the Orient Express was published.
Yeah.
If it was before or after this.
Yeah. I think it was before, wasn't it? I think it was before. Mm-hmm. Yeah, before. But yeah, that's why we did the title of it. Like it was the title for our episode was like Murder on the 1416, because I thought it sounds very much like the Orient Express kind of thing.
Right. And so it's not like, unlike the Murder on the Orient Express, where then they, you know, they're questioning everybody on the train that was, you know, that could have access. Mm. The carriage she's in, there's only one way in and one way out.
Yep. Yeah.
And were there, I guess I have a hard time picturing it, but are there multiple, she wasn't the only one in that carriage, right? Or was she?
Well, the only thing we know
about
it.
Obviously, there was someone else that killed her. But
yeah, the only thing we know about it was that she had time in there to eat some of a sandwich and to smoke two cigarettes because they found the cigarette butts on the floor. We don't know of anybody that got sort of in and out of the train that anybody saw particularly, except for like the next Morgan's favorite person in the whole case.
Yes, she's fantastic. But Bob, when I heard this case, in we talk about train carriages, I'm thinking of a long train carriage with like multiple rows of seats, right? So they'll say like 10 rows of seat. These smoking carriages, it's really a slot. And there's a seat on one side, a seat on the other side. And that's it. So one door in, one little place you can walk, seat on one side of the wall, a seat on the other side of the wall. And that's it.
That's it. So there's not like, because I'm picturing the train that I took from like London to Newcastle.
Yes, that's.
They were nice enough to get us like the like first class tickets up there, which means we were sitting in like a carriage with like a little table.
Yeah. Yeah.
In front of us. Like, yeah. But there was probably 20 people in our carriage. So it's not like that. Mm. So this is a carriage where you go in and there's just a couple people there.
Yeah. Just like the old style, like you think of the Agatha Christie ones where they've just got the carriage that you walk in and it's just two seats either side. So you'd be sat facing each other. There'll be a window at the end and then a door this end. So you kind of just go in and you'd sit facing the person in front of you. And that's what it was. Then that's all it was for her. It was just one way in, one way out.
It would probably sit what max of maybe 8 to 10 people, maybe.
I think probably 4 to 6.
Oh, that's
it. Not very big. Yeah. It's very small. Yeah, very small.
Wow. And anyone in there, would they have been able to see? Like, if there are other people in the carriage that weren't the murderer, would they have been able to see the murder taking place?
No. If anyone else was in the carriage, you'd be sort of sat opposite, facing each other. So it would only have been her and the murderer in that. The either side carriages, the ones that were next to her, would also be the same, so that you couldn't see in. There's no windows either side of the carriage. They're only sort of track side.
Okay.
So you wouldn't be able to see into her carriage unless you walked up the track and looked in the door.
Mm-hmm. God, that's it's insane. And then and of course, in 1988, it's not like they have DNA or anything like that.
No.
Has there ever been any talk of the UK authorities, like, trying to open the case back up or test evidence in it, you know, try to test DNA from cigarette butts or anything like that?
I think they've looked through it. They do keep looking through it. I don't think it's, I think every so often they'll go back to it. And I think that they've tried with now DNA now, but I believe that all they've got is hers. All they've got is just all her blood. And back then, I mean, we've got crime scene photos and literally the investigators are stood in the blood. They just stood there in the carriage, like taking photos and stuff, walking all over it. There's no like, let's like contain the scene. Like, don't walk in there. There was just stuff everywhere. And it's like back to the old, you know, those kind of days where they've got their little magnifying glasses out. And it was, not great scene management.
There are numerous things that drive me nuts about this case. First being the fact that in the carriage next to Debbie's, there was a French au pair by the name of Helene, who heard screaming for a full 2 minutes and did nothing. She did not raise alarms. She did not pull like the emergency line. She didn't even look into the carriage to see what happened, to see if anyone needed help. She just went on her way and left, right? So does nothing. God. So that's it. The second thing is the porter goes in, he sees the body. He doesn't sound any alarm. So everyone who got off the train at that station was able to leave.
Right. So he didn't lock it down or anything.
He didn't lock down. There was no lockdown at all. There's the fact that, if I'm not mistaken, Cherry, wasn't there one of the passengers, didn't they say that he looked like he had like scrapes or something or blood on him?
Yeah, there was a guy that left the carriage, a lady that saw a man leave the carriage. I think he was wearing like something like light blue or something, and she saw him running, and Helene followed him, didn't she, down the track?
Yeah.
So she followed this guy. She's too scared to pull the cord, but she follows this murderer down and then loses him in the station. So we were like, what? Okay, so you were too scared to pull a cord whilst you're in a carriage safely, but you got out of your carriage and followed a guy, a murderer, all the way down and all the way through. Why didn't you just pull the cord?
Exactly. And then even without that, this is a very, very busy major station that they're at.
Yeah. Yes.
There are CCTV cameras everywhere. Everywhere. So you would assume that this guy...
Even in 1988, they had cameras.
Yeah, they had the old ones, you know, like the big fat ones. They're the really old ones.
Yeah. Right. So I actually confirmed this. So I found a photo from 1988 of a camera which was pointing right at the exit. So there was CCTV pointed at where all these passengers would be coming off of the platform. into the station.
Not out of, but not not one on the door of her specific
carriage.
No. So at least there should be video somewhere of every person who was on that train who got off and left the platform into the station. Mm-hmm. There should be. So you should be able to go through and say, well, this guy's running. He's wearing a blue shirt. It looks like he has some blood on him. But no, apparently they don't have it. Or
he would have been covered in blood too. The scene was so bloody. Yeah. Unless he got changed. It was very close to the end when Helene heard the screaming. It was really close to the end, the last stop. So it was about 6 minutes. So, you know, he must have got on, if he wasn't already on there, he must have got on the stop before the end. So he had about 6 minutes to murder her and then get out and run away. And I was mistaken from earlier. We do have a DNA profile from him, which they have been testing, but there's nothing on our DNA database for him. So the DNA database was started in 1997. So if he died beforehand, you know, they're not going to find who he was.
I wonder if they'll be able to use something like GEDmatch or whatever, where they use, you know, genealogy to at least get close. It's interesting because, you know, you look, I mean, only having kind of a cursory knowledge of the case, but it's like, was this a personal attack? I think I read here that they say that, you know, police think that she knew the killer that did it. It's like, otherwise, like, were there other attacks like this? Was this a serial killer that was doing this all over the place?
But there were other train attacks around the time, but I don't think they were able to ever actually conclusively link them together.
No, that's right. There was a guy, wasn't there, that just used to hop on trains and like be, he was very angry and would shout and scream at people, but never actually killed anybody. A few people had said about that. And then obviously Debbie. Yeah. He was armed with a big knife. So it was a premeditated thing. It's not just like he's come onto her or something. She's knocked him back and then he's throttled her because he's angry. I mean, he went there with a knife. So he was obviously planning to kill someone.
And he had to have known that she was in there. He would have had to have known that she was in that one carriage.
Yeah, it had to be like an extreme amount of planning if she was the target, unless it was just a random, I'm going to kill someone whoever's in here is the one that's going to get it. Well, it's super interesting. People have to listen to your episode on it that you called it the murder. What was the title of the episode again?
It's Murder on the 1416.
Murder on the 1416. And you guys are, it's your birthday. Didn't you start the show last August?
Yeah, we did.
We did.
Yeah.
Nice. Did you have a birthday party or anything for the big 1 year?
Well, it's so funny because Morgan, like, we recorded our episode for this week yesterday and he was like, hey, happy anniversary. And I was like, what? And he's like, happy anniversary. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's not my anniversary. And he's like, no, it's our anniversary, like the whole year. And I was like, no way. I can't believe that. We didn't do it. Like a hot married couple, we didn't really do anything, did we? It was just like, no.
Right. We'll have to do something. We'll have to do something for CrimeCon Vegas, right? We'll have a belated birthday party next April.
I'm so excited.
You can bake a cake.
Oh, no, I'm not. No. We'll buy one when we get out there. They've got a Carlos out there. We'll go buy stuff.
Well, congratulations, guys, on the podcast. It sounds great. For your listeners, definitely check it out. Their names are Cherry and Morgan. The podcast is called Crimepedia. Check it out. It'll be your next big true crime binge. And both Cherry and Morgan, thank you both.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
True Crime Binge is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Audioboom. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing. Music and artwork by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com. Our website, TrueCrimeBinge.com, was created by Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com. If you're a listener and would like to recommend a future guest or a podcaster that would like to request an interview, you can do so right on our website. And again, that web address is TrueCrimeBinge.com. If you're enjoying the show, please do me a huge favor and take a minute to rate and review us on iTunes or whatever platform you're using to listen. And make sure you give us a follow on social media. We can be found everywhere at True Crime Binge. Thank you so much for listening, and make sure you tune in next Wednesday morning for another podcaster, another case, and another True Crime Binge.